lie. I be rolling with you, mommy. I be feeling the motion. When I'm inside you, I be deep as the ocean. When it comes to your love, can't lie. It be strong as a potion. That's why me and you forever be coasting. Let's roll.
Co-pilot on the passenger side, be so fly. Yeah. She so lit, we so high. Just me and my chick, yeah. Just me and my chick, yeah. Co-pilot.
Yo, 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 what up, y'all? Welcome to another one, and we're back. This your boy, Rob One, and this is Sparking Conversation, y'all. And y'all know what we do each and every week, man. We get on here, and we chop it up with some of the world's most interesting people. And then when we don't have anyone on to talk to, me and Mika, we talk to each other. I guess we're interesting. At some point, I guess we could figure it out. But that's what we do, right? We get on here and we just chop it up each and every week. But one of the things that we do the most and we are thankful for is we allow this platform to be there for the people who need a voice, right? For the people who have things going on in their life that where local news and national news, they kind of get their hot moment, they get their story, and then boom, it just dies down. And we understand that when it comes down to the things that we deal with in our life, you know, the more people know about it, the more traction that gets under it, that's what helps us get the word out to the people. And it can help prevent these things from continuously happening, because the narrative that we are on for the last few months have been impacted families, right? We have been allowing impacted families to come on the platform and to tell a story, right? And to not be held at whatever, you know, judgment may have been placed out there about whoever they're coming up here to talk about. Because honestly, you know, we understand one thing, and we don't understand nothing else. There's not a single solitary person that's perfect in this world. And there's no such thing as getting it right all the time. And then at some times, you know, we deal with this thing called fight or flight, right? And as Black men, we have been trained to have to deal with that each and every single day. This is a choice that it's more so than a choice just figuring out what you're going to eat, right? Figuring out what you're going to put on or figuring out. None of that stuff is more of a choice than we have to figure out between those two choices, either fight or flight, right? Knowing what we're supposed to stand there and have to be masculine about, and then knowing when it's okay for us not to react emotionally, right? That's this balance that we're supposed to have is something that people are not teaching us out here, right? This is something that you're going to have to learn as you keep going forward in life. So today is no different than that. We have a family on tonight, right? That's going to come on and they're going to really chop it up with us and let us know like what they're dealing with, right? And it's a narrative that we've been faced on here, right? Murder by the police. So let's not say that. Let's just say being unalive by the law enforcement. And so much, you know, when it comes from us or people that look like me, they always say the same thing, you know. Oh, you guys just keep saying the same thing. You keep beating the same narrative. It ain't that. You guys just be doing this and y'all are this and y'all are that, you know, because that's the picture they paint, right? That's what we are. Like but this analogy that I have to think about when we face with each and every day just by wearing the skin color is just one thing. When you look out there in the plains of Africa, you ever notice that the gazelles are some of the most athletic animals out there? They got the most agility. You know what I'm saying? They travel together. They even seem like they even have weapons a little bit with the horns on their head, right? But out of all the animals out there, they're the most hunted. And that's what that reminds me of each and every day. Like, no matter what, each and every day is a gamble when we walk outside the door, when we turn that key to lock it versus when we turn that key to unlock it. Turning that key to unlocking it is a blessing each and every day wearing this skin color. You know why? Because, you know, whoever we are is who we are. But the fact that we gotta just live life based on the fact that that's not nothing that we can change, but we have to live each and every day being hunted. And I feel like, you know, for the most part, that's not talked about enough, you know, because in this particular life that we've been dealing with, we just been throwing the word racism out there when it's bigger than racism. I think it's way past that. I think, you know, using the word racism has been used to separate us from, you know, from each other for the longest. And tonight we're going to prove that. Like, listen, yo, you know, I know everybody expects that what a family is supposed to look like, right? They got that image. But that's not what it's about. And that's why I say so much more than not. We have way more things in common than we don't, you know? Like, so many people are taught the way that they feel about the other person based on their race. But one thing is for sure, y'all, the things that's happening to us who wear the same color as me. I don't like to claim black and all that other stuff, because let's just think about it, y'all. On a test, if we answered the color that we are as black, we'll get that wrong. So we shouldn't be walking around here claiming one blanket statement, because that's not a race, that's a color. So the people who look like me, who have to face each and every day just with the fact that you don't have to do nothing wrong. All you got to do is just be who you are. That's crazy. But to all the people that watch this platform each and every week, I definitely appreciate y'all, man. I want y'all to know that. And to all of y'all that download the audio version of this platform, y'all get this on all y'all streaming platforms. Thank y'all so much, man, because we appreciate y'all, because y'all help these messages get along. And let's just be honest, y'all. You know, we have been able to help people with this platform, too. And I'm not saying it in the sense of bragging. I'm just saying it in the sense of why I get fulfillment each and every week by coming up here, right? Because it really helps. And as much as people may think that it's all about the viral moments, I promise y'all it helped these families, y'all. So look, I'm going to bring Meek up real quick, right? And then we're going to bring our guest on, right? And then our guest is going to get into it, and she's going to let y'all know what her family's been dealing with. And so far, you guys are going to get this theme, right? Because it's been happening in each and every... Look, so far, we've been in Mississippi, right? We've been in Tennessee. We've been in Georgia a few times. We've been in South Carolina. We've been in Virginia. We've been here in North Carolina. And then we was over there in Washington State. And so now tonight we'll be coming from by ways of what's going on in Oregon. Right? So it's going to be a very great conversation tonight. It is going to be an emotional one because, hey, listen, we mean something to the people in our lives, y'all. Right? We mean something to the people in our lives, man. They tell us that we don't mean nothing to nobody. That's how they treat us, but we mean something to the people in our lives, yo. Let me bring Meek up real quick to see what's going on.
What up?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, I'm good, y'all. Hey, I'm glad to be here. It's good to see you. It's another week, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Right. So, you know, I was thinking, you know, so, you know, the video, I know you sent the videos.
I found it
a little
further.
There
was one at the top and one in the middle. Yeah. I didn't see the middle one.
And so, with tonight's show, like, it's really, you know, this is the second time that me and you have had a show where, you know, body cam footage has been presented, and the people, the police, and all of these people that are speaking on the body cam footage, it's just, wow. For a bunch of
people,
at all, for a bunch of people who said that they reacted in out of fear for their life.
Yeah, that's ugly. That's nasty work. Nasty work.
And there was no fear in their voices when they're talking about these people, right? It was no fear.
It's talking like they're not people. It's just like, it's just like, there's no way you're that numb to it. You can't be. Like, what is this? You shouldn't be, is what I should say.
And that's why I say, yo, I think it's past racism now. This is just particularly should just be classified as hate crime. How can people just come into this country, get all the type of laws enacted for just be able to say that things are happening to them based on what they consider a hate crime? And I think for us, we got to get out of that old school mentality. We still running around using the racist card. We got to look at this for what it really is. This is hate crime, yo.
Yeah.
Because you know, the story that we have tonight, there's so many different details in it, but for a person to just be left out there for 2.5 hours
Like, what? And they're like, he's right there. It's not like he was far away. Like, you knew exactly where he was. Like,
what? And then the fact of, you know, what I feel bad about is that, which I know a lot of people don't think about this when we think about, you know, the fear that we have. You know, we have, we've had plenty of conversations up here when we talked about why we run. And it's so much that it don't matter, because when we talked about Vekelvia Holmes out in, you know, Georgia, he didn't run. He was sitting in his car with his hands on the steering wheel, and he was killed. Then you have people who run off, and, you know, because they're scared, you know, it's like, I'm damned if I do, damned if I don't. And then the tragedy like this happens, right? When they brag about the technology, you know, that's another thing that really killed me, was the technology that was used on this one fella, right? And for them to really have to use that type of force, if they really wanted to apprehend him, they really could have, right?
And, a SWAT team?
You know what I'm saying? Let them face it. Listen, whatever it is that they saying, let them face it. He'll deal with that. But like, to unalive a person based on just the way you feel, and then have the audacity to talk like that. Listen, we got a representative of the family up here, right, tonight, right? We got Carrie. She's gonna come on. She's gonna speak on behalf of the family, because, you know, they're in an active case right now. So we want to make sure that they are able to get this story out to people, you know what I mean, without damaging the case at all. But I wanted to be the first to say, like, to give the audience and the people that's watching, like, the details of this, it does fall in line with a lot of the parents that we had on. And if you guys don't see the theme, I don't know what more that we can do to help show y'all. And it's more families that scheduled to come on the platform, y'all. You know what I mean? And so think about that. Like, it's got to be a way. We have to find ways to work together more than we have to stay away, right? I don't know. I don't know how much more of a wake-up call we need. But, hey, that's what the platform is for. The platform is here so we can make sure that we give people the opportunity to understand why unity is better than whatever we got going on right now in the face of these things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. So we're going to bring our guest up real quick, and we're going to see how she's feeling tonight. Let's see.
Hello. Hello. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for coming on the platform. Thank you for allowing us as a safe space for you to be able to tell you and your family's story, okay?
Thank you.
All right. So listen, what we need you to do is just tell the audience and stuff who you are and the reason why you're on the platform tonight.
My name is Carrie Miles. I am Derek Clark Jr.'s aunt. Derek was unalived on June 18th, 2022 at a minor traffic stop. And like you were discussing, he was then left for 2 hours while they had drone footage of him. He was wearing a reflective jacket. They laughed. They shook hands. They made racist remarks. And speaking of being hunted, that's exactly how our family feels. That's what happened to him. They even called him a still warm dead deer.
Yeah.
So we're currently, we have a lawsuit in federal court where we have 26 officers named and Clackamas County Sheriff's Department.
Yeah. And that was the reason why I wanted to make sure that we, you know, we got a few details out before we get into more, is that, you know, the value of our lives, right? And I really am, it's just like, it's just one of them things that, you know, it's hard for me each and every day to actually be able to express that without seeming like, you know, we be complaining about things, right? So, Carrie, I just want you to know that, you know, everything that he might have felt in those moments that those things were happening is things that, you know, all of us we have to feel each and every day.
Yeah, and we're really, Derek just exuded love. Everyone that knew him would say that, and I get emotional talking about him because he's so special. Knowing that he was surrounded by such hate from over 50 law enforcement officers, three of them, one of them a woman, heard him yell for help about 15 minutes later after he was shot, and they ignored him. Just thinking about him lying there and hearing these things is just beyond any kind of, I just can't even describe the pain that we feel, because we don't know what he heard. We don't know. They were so close to him. He had to have heard the laughing. There was so much laughter. And it's just, it's heartbreaking to us to think that he was surrounded by that.
Right. Yeah. And so what we want to do is, before we get into more of the details about what happened, let's take a few moments here to just like, let's talk about him. I know you mentioned just a few things about how loving of a person he was, but let's talk about him as a person for a little while. What did he mean to the family, and how was he in the community? And even, you know, when it comes down to you, I know you said earlier that, you know, you had so many special moments with him based on you guys' communication. So let's talk about him a little bit, yeah. You know?
Yeah, I always, you know, have a hard time with this because it feels so cliche, but he truly was one of those that lit up the room when he came in. We have various videos of him walking into work and everyone running up to him, giving him hugs, a lot of videos like that. But he was just an extraordinary person. He was a deep thinker. He was a best friend to many people. We found that out at his funeral. I can't tell you how many people came up to me and said, Derek was my best friend. I could only talk to him about what's going on with me. He had really special relationships and different relationships with people. With me, you know, I love poetry and philosophy, and he did too. So we would talk a lot about poetry, philosophy, writing. He liked to write. He wrote a journal that we're lucky to have, and to be able to see some insight. He was very open about struggling with his emotions and struggling with where to fit in. He openly discussed that with family, with everyone. And you know, he'd sometimes say, we kind of both had in common not feeling like we were made for this world or something, in very different ways, of course. Right. But he would mention that often. But he was really just the kind of guy that, you know, if we're sitting around at a family function and he's sitting next to me, he would grab my hand and hold it. I mean, just so sweet. He would tell his friends that he loved them. You know, I'd see him on video and they're talking, you know, about whatever. And at the end, I hear him say, you know, I love you, you know, I love you, ma'am. So I feel like a lot of people didn't have that. The pain of him not knowing that he was loved and that right. They loved him, because he was so open with it. He was open with his feelings. Right. He struggled with different kind of, he used to talk about different variations of himself. You know, there's the one wanting to fit in different worlds. There's the one that's mad about this, or there's the one that's heard about this. He was just really a complex person.
Right. Which I feel like we all are, right? It's just that very few people find their outlets to express themselves, right? So before I get into my next question, I was going to say that, right, Meek? Like when we was thinking about the thing about the journal, right? So what do you think? How important is it to be able to have that type of an outlet to be able to jot down your emotions? in your perspective?
I think it's oh, go ahead.
Sorry. The freedom you have when you journal, there's nobody there to judge you. It's just you in your journal. And so you can get out so much if you just allow yourself to at least be vulnerable with yourself. Some people, that's even hard, you know, but as long as you can tap into that and just know, like, this is your piece. There's no other person. There's nobody who can run and tell anybody. Like, this is just a way for you to connect and get get all your thoughts out in right. a safe space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I agree with that. I think it was very important. And for the family, it was great that they were able to have that piece of him left behind, you know, because he was a writer and he used that gift in order to be able to, you know, write down bits and pieces of the complexity about what he was feeling, right?
Yeah.
And so, Carrie, I wanted to talk a little bit about the fit in part, right? So we understand that he was of a mixed family, right? So let's talk a little bit about the family and what that entailed, because, you know, based on the reports and stuff, he was labeled as an African-American male who, you know, at a traffic stop, jumped out of his car with a gun. And you know, we don't, the narrative of that without understanding exactly who he was as a person, right? So let's talk a little bit about the fit-in part. Like, let's talk about the family dynamic a little bit, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah, so, you know, my side of the family, white side of the family, we were always there for him. You know, he grew up in neighborhoods that were predominantly white. His black father was not around as much when he was little. And when he got to be a teenager, he really craved that need for a father, to be around his father. He was around his father more. And I think still felt like, you know, where do I fit in? Where do I really fit in? His dad was part of a gang at one point, and so that kind of influence, I think, intrigued him. And I know that that's very common for people looking to, you know, if they want to belong somewhere.
Right.
So a pretty big mixed, you know, dynamic of a family, and we're, his father passed away, but we're, you know, very close to that side of the family. He has a stepsister and half sister, and then a stepbrother as well. So we're close to that side of the family.
Okay, great. Yeah, because, you know, so often, as they would like us to believe, when it comes to the relationship between white and black people, is that we don't share commonality when it comes to how we live. I think they think that we're all are just the same based on what we are supposed to live by, to be separate. And, you know, they don't understand that, you know, our family is our family, right? You know, for everyone that's born, we don't get to choose our family. But what they cannot say is that we don't have things that bring us together if we would just allow it, right? So often, just the sheer thought of what happened to him and the way that they talked and the things that they said on that body cam footage, and, you know, like you said, the hate that they have for a person just based on the way that he looks.
And I feel like if that was me, first of all, I wouldn't have been shot had I ran. But imagine them saying that about somebody looks like me, right? That just would have never taken place, in my opinion.
No, and the one of the other things that is a real reality too is that if they did look like you, they probably wouldn't have ran, even if they did have a gun for real.
Exactly. Yeah. Besides that, yeah, for sure.
You just jumped out the car and just would have started talking, they talk. You know, yeah. Because you know, in this country, unfortunately, you know, they don't have, you know, the same inkling to have to run. Right? They speak directly to their rights because they feel like the rights were created for them. So they would not have ran, you know, or even felt like they had a need to do so. You know, so but unfortunately, that's the truth, you know, and it's not a thing that I guess, you know, we could walk around and just blame other people for the fact that this is the way that it was set up. The only difference is that, you know, when it comes down to what we're really supposed to be voting on and how we're supposed to try to do the best that we can to try to get these things changed from the inside out. But until we realize that, I guess that we'll continue to have to deal with it. But that body cam footage was really disturbing, right? The things that they were saying, the laughter, the analogies that they were using to describe him, comparing him to animals, the fact that on the body cam, they say these things like, is it, you can hear them repeat the fact that, oh, he's asking for help. You hear him? He's saying help, you know? Like, the fact that these things are going on, you know, and it's no sense of urgency to, like they don't see us. You know, like, when they see us, they don't see their children, right? They don't see their brothers, right? They don't see their cousins. They don't see their favorite or their best friend. They don't see that when they see us.
That's the yeah, you know, and part of this whole thing is just the betrayal. This was also Juneteenth weekend, I want to point out. Part of all of this swirled with so many emotions is the betrayal from authorities, from authorities of all types, when we were asking what happened, why was he left out there for so long? You know, the answers were always, we couldn't see him. We didn't know where he was. You know, we didn't know if he was armed, you know? And so, you know, after we received the footage, you can imagine how completely shocked we were to see a drone on him. Quickly to see SWAT standing within, I think, less than 5 feet from him.
Exactly.
In the parking lot. We even asked, there were some neighbors around that were disturbed by what happened. And so we asked, you know, were they yelling at him? Were they yelling curse words at him like the neighbors were saying? And we were given an answer by one, I'll just say, authority. Absolutely not. They called him sir the entire time. And so before, you know, we had to wait 6 months to watch the footage. And so after watching the footage, there's not, and I've watched it all. I've watched all the hours over and over and over. And not one time did they call him sir. So that betrayal and the shock is, we continue to lose Derek every time we hear about something that was not truly what happened. It's like losing Derek 100 times over, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, another thing that really bothered me was the fact that how long it took them to try to figure out how to get to y'all to even tell y'all about it. When the address that they did find, or where they said they found you guys on social media, but it was the address that was on his actual license.
And that was on his license for this type of situation. That was purposefully put on his license in case anything ever happened to him. He wanted his mother's address on it. And that is another thing we were not told all the truths about, but there will be some things in the trial that will come out. We'll be able to speak on that more. I believe, I just believe that because it was Juneteenth, they wanted to avoid any kind of protest that Monday. That's just my feelings. They had, that was another thing that they told us differently from what actually happened. They told my sister that they had to find his information on an old doctor's report, you know, with, and it's like, well, nothing made sense to us, right? And we're not the type of family to just listen and, okay, we don't, if it doesn't make sense to us, we investigate.
Right.
So that delay, it was over 40 hours. And we called it in. So he was missing, obviously, that evening. Didn't know where he was. And so on Saturday around 11, a call was placed to the non-emergency number because they read in the paper about someone being unalived.
Right.
And they asked, was that Derek Clark? You know, and the person on the other line said, absolutely not. No, was not. You know, are you sure? We can't find him, you know? And so by Sunday, you know, my sister had called in and said, I got to report him missing. And they said, oh, well, we need to come to your home. So it was only after she even called in a second time. And then there's just other evidence of wanting that to be delayed.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so, all right. So that's even different too, because that changes the narrative based on the news report too, because the news report says that they found you guys' address on Facebook. So
yeah,
that's it. If you know, when your sister calls in to file a missing persons report, or at least to call it in, and then they say, hey, we have to come to you, then how would you know that I'm calling you for the same person had you not already known already?
Right. So
things that I feel like, you know, I don't know what makes people think that we are stupid. Like, what gives people the audacity to feel like we're just stupid out here? Like, you know, people like is don't have a certain level of common sense to ask certain questions, right? Right. And so let me ask you this then, Kerry, help me to understand this. So if they waited to the initial phone call to report him missing in order to tell you that they had to come to you guys just to see, you know, to have whatever that conversation is with you, did you guys automatically feel in your spirit that was what they were coming to tell y'all while not even allowing y'all to report him missing?
It was, I believe. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So before they even got to the house to even tell y'all, it was already in the atmosphere that this is why they're doing this, based on the fact that you guys have been looking for him for a couple of days.
Yeah, my sister was just in shock, but knew something bad was coming. Yeah. But we still don't understand why we were told that wasn't him on Saturday. They had his, you know, the coroner did the autopsy that morning, like 7 a.m, and they had his ID. For some reason, they didn't find it at the scene, but it was in his front jeans pocket. So they have that information. So why they wouldn't look to see the address, and, you know, I don't know how all of that works, but I have unfortunately had friends who have lost loved ones in car accidents, and they go directly to the address that's on the driver's license. So why is that not done in these types of cases?
Right. I mean, because I think your theory is completely correct, you know. the weekend, the thing that was going on. And, you know, honestly, I don't know why for the life of me that, I mean, okay, so here's another thing that really got me that was really, really weird too, because the footage that I seen whenever he jumped out the car, to me, it looked like it was his cell phone that he had. Because whatever it was in his left hand. So which leads me to believe that he drives mostly with his right hand, because I would think that, you know, very seldom do we drive with both hands in the car, which means that if we're going to do anything, you know, based on a situation like that, we will switch everything to our dominant, especially if we're scared. So to me, when he jumped out, it looked to me like that was a cell phone that he had in his hand.
Yeah, and it was in his right hand, supposedly, but that was away from officers, right? You know, it's towards the car. And I have a struggle with this personally, because, you know, about various people, I feel like they should, law enforcement, the investigation, should have to prove that was a gun in his hand, in my opinion. And they found no prints on that gun. They found that gun, a gun, in a parking lot where the SWAT officers were. So they knew he was unarmed. So I still struggle. And it's not that I don't believe that could ever happen. It's just mostly, I just deal with facts, and I have a hard time seeing that fact. And then to find out that there's no prints at all on a gun that's thrown in a parking lot right by SWAT it just rubs me the wrong way. But I don't know, you know, I mean, there's people that have said that they can see it. I don't know. I do know the look in his eyes when he got out of the car, and it was pure fear. You know, my sister and I wondered about, we talked about the different, you know, types of emotions that Derek went through. And we wondered if he had that, you know, mad tough guy look or defiant or, you know, and it was pure terror. He was running for his life. That we know him. I was there when Derek was born. You know, we know him well enough to know that. It was fear.
Yeah, because they pretty much rammed the car, mm-hmm. right? And
they did. And
pushed him into the ditch.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, that would have been scary for anybody dealing with that, right? To the point where, why would they do that? You know, he wasn't driving that fast where they couldn't have pulled around him and got in front of him maybe and did that type of thing, or maybe, you know, something like that. But just to ram the back of him like that, it just don't sit well. I mean, like I said, you know, there's a lot of things I'm not going to personally say, because like I said, you guys have things going on, and we know that the trial and all that stuff is very important. So I'm just saying, just based on the way things look and what I've saw, it just puts me in that mindset that you said earlier, based on what I said earlier, was the hunted part, right? That's what this looks like. He didn't even get across the street good before they started shooting.
They were running after him, shooting him in the back.
Just letting it off. And it's like, sir, like, what do you, wait, hold on. Like, are you trying to catch him? Like, what do you, no, you're not. Like, you are literally hunting this young man. This man is in fear of his life. And this has been the theme, you know, the story we had in Georgia with, you know, the lady whose son was, you know, out of town with his dad. The same thing. He running. They saying that he has this gun and all this other stuff. But then he got entry wounds in the front and his back. It's like, what are we to believe? Like, you really are telling us that these are the reasons why you did that. But the number one thing that killed me was the fact that they said after the grand jury had went through their whole thing, they based that they were justified by the testimony of them saying that they were in fear of their life. When they're laughing and joking and like, where was the fear at?
Yeah, I mean, my mind is very, I work for a financial institution. I'm in compliance and regulation. So it's, again, like I was watching the footage and was trying to count all the number of times that they had his back, their backs turned to him when he was lying there. And when he gets out of his vehicle, not only was he bumped into the ditch, there's two police cars and two officers with their guns drawn, ready to shoot. So I just can't imagine how he felt, but I know it was pure fear. I know his looks.
Yeah. I personally, I don't, you know, whether he would have ran or not, I'm sure, you know, fear was just all in there, because that's, it looked to me, it looked very scary, you know, it was terrible, you know, it was a terrible situation to even have to witness. And I know you guys seen more of the footage than, you know, what I've seen, you know, and it's probably so many more details to this that is just disturbing. So, you know, how has your sister been able to deal with all of this? I mean, I know you guys haven't had a chance to grieve at all, right? Because you've just been fighting the whole time, right?
Yeah, I mean, fighting and investigating. And we finally have a wonderful attorney and investigator that have kind of taken that on for us. You know, it was really stressful to have to do all of that on our own for a while.
Right.
But my sister is just, you know, I don't even, I can't imagine how she feels, because I know how I feel. And he wasn't my son, you know, he was my nephew. Her way of grieving is really to work with affected families, impacted families, and figure out, you know, what things can we do to change. And I've got a long list of the things that need to be changed, and it's going to take a long time, you know, but they're pretty, some are just the simplest of things that you would think in the year, you know, 2022 would be in place. You know, for instance, officers discussed what happened on the scene. That to me should be, you know, a big violation of their policy and some kind of consequences should have happened for that, because both the shooters were speaking together about what happened so that they could formulate their story together. Right. Both watched the footage many times before they made statements. I find that to be just insane for them to be. I mean, I think that they should make statements based on their recollection, not based on a video, because right. they can tailor anything, you know, to the video. So yeah. there's a lot of change that needs to happen. Another one is autopsies. Two officers were in the autopsy room, and I don't find that appropriate either, because the more I read about that, the more just, you know, online reading about why does that happen? You know, if there's an officer involved shooting, why would there be officers inside the autopsy, you know, when it's being performed?
Right.
And the answer was, you know, so they can give the story of what happened to assist. And I believe the body tells the story. He was shot in the back twice. They missed five other times. And I think that's, you know, another thing. So things like that need to change. Things like when this happened, we had no idea, even though I had, you know, have been helping with protests and all these things. I had no idea what to do when this happened. I was Googling stuff, like what to do first. So we're working on creating a website, and only impacted families would work for the website and answer calls. But it would be for people that have gone through this and need help in what to do. Like a second autopsy is a huge one.
Right.
So, because we had a second autopsy, and I'm not able to discuss yet. As you know, the grand jurors and the medical examiner report both stated he died within seconds. And we hear him yelling for help 15 minutes after. So we know that's not true.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, and there's other evidence to show that's not true.
Yeah. And you know, I've been noticing, you know, it's been a theme when it comes down to the police. You know, recently a lot of them have been, you know, getting charged but not being convicted. And I know it's a new law that's been passed this year in regards to that, right? And so, you know, hopefully, you know, like, I just pray that you guys get the justice that you deserve, because it's going to set an example for the rest of the impacted families, because a lot of them are still fighting 5, 6, and some even 10 years later. They're still fighting and they're still going through it. And the fact that you all are helping each other is really commendable. And so, you know, I just want you guys to know, like, you know, behind the scenes, we'll be able to, you know, speak with all the families and figure out exactly how to bring that website of yours to reality and help motivate the people who are not actually dealing with it to really get behind it as well, not just to impact the families, because at any given time, it can happen to you. As the person that's watching, right? It can happen. Nobody expects it, but it can. And when it does hit your doorstep, like you said, you had to Google whatever the first step was, they're going to be right in the same space. We're trying to figure out what is the first step. And so with you guys coming together and putting that together already, this will help, because, we have to find a way. And we can't give up this fight, no matter how long it takes. We have to find a way to hold people accountable for just being able to take our lives because they feel like it.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And it can take a long time, you know, and it's to the point where, you know, I look at some people, some of Derek's friends that have been impacted, you know, heavily by this. Some are now, you know, in law school because of this. I look to them as the future in carrying this on, because it will still, I just know it will still need to happen when I'm no longer here. You know, I'm only, you know, 51, but we need to kind of prep youth to carry on the fight too, you know? And our biggest, you know, what we want the most is to have another grand jury trial, because facts were not presented at the first grand jury trial. So there are many statements that do not align with the video. Like, he was pointing, I was looking down the barrel of a gun, is what one of the shooters said. One of the shooters said he ran towards my car, towards me, things like that.
Wow.
Nothing worse than looking down the barrel of a gun, you know, is one of the other quotes. And, you know, they're asked if they talked about the, you know, what happened, if the shooters talked. And, you know, I asked him if he was good. I told him I was. Other than that, I don't believe there's any communication. So just a lot of things that just blatantly didn't happen were presented. And they never presented him crying out for help. That was found by his family in the footage.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's our biggest, and that'll be, you know, that'll be a fight. But we will never stop. Never, ever. We have too many friends, you know, that Jimmy Hill. You know, it took him, I think, almost 6 years to get him for his son. Elaine, I know, is going to trial tomorrow that you interviewed, Elaine.
Yeah.
And we know that it's going to take a while, but we're never, ever going to stop. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And that is definitely the energy that all of you moms have been representing, that have been coming on this platform. You guys are not going to stop. You're going to continue to keep fighting. And, you know, at this particular point in time, something has to change, because you guys are not going to give it up. And they can't keep feeding us any type of narrative, because saying that somebody was running towards you, but then they get shot in the back, that doesn't make sense. Like, you know, unless he running towards you backwards. Like, this is just a lot of things that we're just not willing to accept no more. I was thinking about this too, Tamika. Hey, yo, look, so check this out. Like, whenever we was thinking about, you know, I know a few shows ago, we were talking with John Barnett, and then we were talking about the reasons why we do run. Right. And at that particular point in time, we noticed that a bunch of parents were saying they would tell their child not to run. So, in these particular situations, you know, how do you prepare a child, you know, a Black child, to be able to experience the police?
I mean, this is my problem with it, because those cops were able to use fear as a justification for what they did, but don't understand that he was afraid. Like, you can't, wow, when you have that happening to you, there's no real way to coach you through that, because your instincts are kicking in at that point. It's fight or flight. And he was trying to survive, and that was it. And that's what I find interesting about their statements, that it based on fear. But nobody thought about, God, he might have been afraid. Like, imagine being ran off the road and then you jump out the car and guns are already drawn at you. What? Of course you're going to run. Anybody's going to run. Right. Because that's a lot, especially a Black man, when it comes to cops. Two of them, you're already outnumbered and they're drawing guns on you. And nobody thought to think, well, maybe he was afraid and that's why he ran. But they can use that as justification to just shoot us down in the middle of the street. And they're armed. They're heavily armed.
That's a great point. That's a great point to look at it from that standpoint. Yeah, right. You know, fear can be used as a justification, but cannot be used as a reason. Like, that is a good way to look at it, because, you know, that is the reason why we run. You know, or that they do, you know, it's fair. But the technology, the drone thing just puts it into a whole nother level, because they could have let him run as far as they wanted to. They would have pulled that drone out, they would have found him. Because it wasn't just a regular drone. It wasn't a regular drone. It was a thermal drone.
Exactly.
Right? And the more he ran, the more his body heat would have resonated anyway. So he could have been hiding in a barn. They would have found him, right? So what I'm saying is that there was really no excuse for them to use the force and then to say you were staring down the barrel of a gun when a person is running away from you. So we want to do a couple more things. So, all right, so Perry, what we want to do is, we want you to, I don't know if you guys have, right now, are you guys going to one central Facebook page that you want people to actually be able to go see the footage for themselves? Is there any, you know, petitions that need to be signed? Is there anything in line?
Yeah, so the Justice for Derek Clark Facebook page is the best place to start. We have had a couple of news interviews recently, and we'll post everything there. We post, so there's a lot of videos of just Derek on there dancing, or, you know, how he was too. So Justice for Derek Clark on Facebook is the place to start. There's also Justice for Derek Clark on Instagram and TikTok. I try to upload a lot on TikTok as well. The footage was finally attained by a news crew that interviewed us, but it took them 4 months because they were refusing to give it to them. So they had to use a law firm to get that footage. But they have it, and they're probably going to release more and more of it. And there's some of that footage in on the pages.
Yeah, definitely, because the actual police was trying to charge the news station to view the footage. And that was really strange, too.
Well, they flat out refused them. They flat out said, you can't have it because there's a case going. And that's not how FOIA requests work. So at first they flat out refused. And I believe the next thing they did was try to charge a lot of money.
Yeah. And that was crazy because they tried to do everything they could not to share the footage with you guys, which was clearly, if they were justified for what they did, there shouldn't have been no reason for them not to. It's just so many different things that is crazy. So we want all of you that's watching that jumped on tonight, we want y'all to make sure that y'all go to Justice for Derek Clark on Facebook. And you guys can see as much of the information as possible. You can even see videos of Derek himself, just so you can get a glimpse of what type of character he had. Because if you look at it from the way that the news reports actually put it before, you know, in a family way, get up there, because I saw you guys had an interview with the actual news station as well, which was good too, that you guys were able to get up there and speak on behalf of what was going on, because the narrative that was painted wasn't really a good one, right? It was not really good. It was, you know, yeah, he jumped out with a gun, and you know, for so many people who said they saw a gun, I don't know what they was looking at. But then again, maybe they wanted to, right? Justify whatever they wanted to do. But I want all the people that's watching to know, like, remember, you know, yes, it's not happened to you and we don't want it to. But then again, we always tell people about ways that you find your purpose. Sometimes things happen for you to really understand exactly why you're supposed to be here. No one wants to go through the things that they go through in order for them to have to go through to find a purpose sometimes, but realize that in that, being able to be there for other people in relation to being able to relate to what they go through is amazing. Even though you don't want to go through. So if you guys remember the guests, remember Carrie Miles, and, you know, go on their page and just drop a couple of emojis, the praying emoji, the heart emoji. Just let them know that you empathize with them, right? Because that's what they need at this particular moment, because the family hasn't been able to grieve because they've been having to fight. And they're not giving up. And every day they have to be reminded of their loss to the point where they cannot grieve and move on. So I want all you guys watching, you know, if you feel it in your heart or feel a desire to, just, you know, reach out to them, just drop a couple of, like I said, let them know, hey, we're praying for y'all. You know, whatever you can, encourage it to let them know that, you know, that you guys, you know, that it's other people out here who understand. You know, even if they can't relate, they can understand, you know, what it's like to suffer with much. Any last things you want the audience to know, Carrie, before we get out of here? Like anything?
That was perfect. We appreciate it. Honestly, a lot of time we feel like nobody cares. It just doesn't seem to, you know, we can't believe we have these statements coming out of these officers' mouths now on the news. And still there's no uproar. So anything that, you know, like you're saying, even an emoji helps us, just knowing that we've got people that understand and that have love in their hearts.
Yeah, it's very important throughout these days because, you know, people are dealing with a lot of things all over the world, right? We know that. We know that, you know, at any given time, a person can be faced with something that is traumatic for them. The only difference is, like I like to say, you know, you just never know when you will need help. And it's always good to try to be just be something for somebody other than just worrying about what you can get from them. And let's stop being judgmental based on race. I think that's another thing that we're going to have to find a way to figure this out. We know that it's not going, you know, it's not going to always work for everyone. But for those that understand the difference between the fact that, you know, being a human being on this earth is way more important than trying to figure out a way to separate yourself by the way you look. When you realize that, then you'll really find your tribe. It's a lot of people out here looking for a tribe every day, you know. And some people have a lot of family but don't have friends because they're not even close to their family, you know. So finding your tribe and, you know, to people that, you like you said, it'll be you moms and all of the impacted families have created a tribe for each other, right, to be a support for each other through, because you guys all can relate. The fact that you guys were all brought together by tragedy. It's just like how they say about us, and we don't get together unless it's a funeral. Like, we don't even have family reunions no more. The only time we have a family reunion is when it's a funeral. Like, you know what I mean? So then it's crazy that that tragedy is the one thing that brings us together. So now we got to find ways that we could come together, and it doesn't have to be based on that, right? So I just want to encourage you and the family, let you guys know that anytime that you want to get something out, even after the trial, whatever, I'm open. This platform is open for y'all. All we got to do is stay connected. I'm going to stay connected with y'all as I do with all the impacted families. Everyone that comes up here, I still communicate with them. I still drop clips and still tag them to make sure that they understand, like, yeah, it is someone out here that cares. I may only be one. Tamika may be only one person. But the one thing about it is that, you know, we're going to do our part to help make sure that the word gets out.
Thank you. That really means a lot. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely. And I appreciate you guys feeling comfortable enough to come up on the platform to even tell your story, because, you know, like I said, everyone, some people just looking for clickbait. Some people just looking to exploit people. And so I'm very thankful that people trust me enough to come up here and share like you guys do. So thank you. And hopefully your sister is watching. If she is, I just want to let her know that I appreciate her, because I've been communicating with her a lot behind the scenes. I understand the role that you guys play, so I'm thankful that y'all have a team, because it works, right? And
hopefully after the trial, you can have her on here.
Oh yeah, my definitely sister. Gotta have her on. Yeah. Because we want to talk to her, because, you know, we want to talk about her and how she felt, because, you know, I think that's very important, right? And she needs to get out her emotions, right? She has been having to bottle it up besides being able to talk to y'all. I think the world needs to know how she feels, right?
I agree.
Definitely looking forward to the day that that happens. So right now, for all y'all that was watching and are watching right now, thank y'all so much. Make sure that y'all go to Justice for Derek Clark Jr. Is the junior part on the page or no? Just Justice
for Derek. I don't think so. Yeah, just Justice for Derek Clark.
All right, Justice for Derek Clark on Facebook, TikTok, and you said Instagram too, right?
Yes.
On Instagram, get the information. You know, like I said, the family is there. They'll be welcoming any type of encouraging words, you guys. Anything that you guys want to send them. Remember, Elaine Simons, we had her on. She's actually in trial right now, dealing with a similar scenario based on, you know, police brutality. And because her son was unalived as well. So then there's others that's following, right? So we want to make sure that these families that come on, for those of y'all that's watching, please reach out to them. Just like I said, timeline, it's quick. You ain't got to get all in their business, get all in their, you know, just send them a little emoji. Let them know that you guys, there's people out here who care. It goes a long way. It goes a long way. All right. So, Tamika, what you want the world to know real quick before we get out of here?
I want them to know not to call me Tamika, but we're going to skip this.
I got professional real quick, y'all. Yeah,
real professional. Okay. Twice in this podcast, you called me Tamika. I was like, is he talking to me?
I know, right? Me, what do you want the world to know?
Human Design, man. Just wrapped up our fourth session. We got some more work we're doing with the girls for the rest of this month. We are opening up just a two-hour crash course into Human Design for people who are interested. And we'll be rolling out another four-week program soon. Journals, planners, whatever you need, let me know. You know, I like to personalize your personal development. Make sure it is fit for you and only you, not something you buy at the store made for everybody in mass production.
Yeah. So all of y'all out there, if you need journals, any of those type of things, Human Design or your birthday and all those other little intricate details, and they could figure it out for y'all and help y'all with y'all journey through life, all right? So as far as me, y'all already know what to do. Y'all just continue to follow all the content. We drop new content every day. Please follow the platform. If you're new tonight and you've been watching on YouTube, please like and subscribe on the channel. Hit the notification button so you guys will know when we drop more content, as well as if you support anyone that's been on the show, you guys will know when clips go up so you can help share and help get the word out to make sure that people understand that these things are going on so they will know. The Miles family is in development of a website so it can help all impacted families all over the world. So y'all make sure that y'all contact them or just, you know, follow them so you guys can stay informed on any as they move around and they make things come to fruition. Okay. So thank you all for jumping on tonight. Everybody that watched, thank you, Carrie, for coming on and sharing your story for you and the family. I look forward to having all of y'all on after the trial. And yeah, I thank y'all, man. And like I always say, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will, right? So until next time, y'all, stay fly out there and don't hurt nobody.